Guess who now is paying for financial reform?
I'll give you a hint. It's not the banks.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bill Radke, and you're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Wednesday, June 30th. The financial regulation bill may go to a vote today, but it is not the one that was worked out last Friday.
Speaking of those financial regulations, what do derivatives have in common with Casablanca? And a proofreading company may need to hire a proofreader. But first,
the House could vote today on a new compromise bill to overhaul financial regulations. It's still the biggest overhaul of Wall Street rules since the Great Depression, but so much for taxing the banks. The compromise was worked out last night by House and Senate negotiators after it appeared Senate Democrats did not have enough support to pass the bill. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joins us now from New York with more. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Bill.
So, last Friday, the Democrats thought they had the votes. The death of Senator Robert Byrd put that into question, but I gather that was not the only complication?
Right. Some Republicans who supported the original Senate bill led by Senator Scott Brown of Massachusetts didn't like the way the bill was paid for through this $19 billion tax on the large banks. And that's been changed. Now the tax is gone and the money is going to come instead from the TARP, the Bank Bailout Fund.
From the bailout fund. So are you telling us taxpayers are going to be on the hook for financial regulation instead of the banks?
Yeah, and in order to get the support needed to do that, the conference committee agreed to end TARP spending authority earlier than planned. That gets them $11 billion that lawmakers say would have been spent on new TARP programs. Of course, remember, any proceeds from the TARP were supposed to go to deficit reduction, but who's keeping track? To come up with the rest, Bill, they raised the amount of money banks have to pay into the FDIC's deposit insurance fund. I just spoke with Cornelius Hurley, who's director of the Moran Center on Banking at Boston University. He expressed frustration that every time this bill gets changed, it seems to get easier on the banks.
This exercise in Washington on this bill, the longer it has gone on, has become more about the November elections and less about the last crisis or the current crisis that we're experiencing.
Now, the House could vote on all of this today. The Senate is now expected to wait until the week of July 12th. And who knows what kind of objections could spring up between now and then.
Yes. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson in New York. Jeremy, thank you.
You're welcome.
Banks have definitely taken a hit to their reputation the last couple of years. Credit unions have managed to keep a better image, but they are also not immune to the recession, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Regulators have closed 10 credit unions since the beginning of the year. During that same time, more than 80 banks failed. Credit unions are considered safer than banks because they have more restrictions on their investments and typically have more reserves. Esmail Adibi is director of the Anderson Center for Economic Research at Chapman University.
They have one advantage over banks, which is they don't pay taxes.
That allows credit unions to charge customers lower fees and lower interest rates. But when credit unions run low on cash, Adibi says it's harder for them to raise money.
Publicly traded bank can issue stocks or they can issue bonds to shore up their reserve. Credit unions don't have that access to the capital.
He expects more credit unions will fail this year. Just like banks, credit union deposits are insured up to $250,000. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Some of the key figures in the last bailout are answering for their actions right now on Capitol Hill. Joseph Cassano headed up the AIG financial products unit that blew up. He and Goldman Sachs President Gary Cohn are testifying to the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Hillary Sale is professor of law and business at Washington University Law School in St. Louis. Professor, welcome.
Happy to be here.
I want to play this cut for you. This is Commission Chairman Phil Angelides starting things off this morning with a movie reference.
As I've explored this world, I feel a little like I've walked into a bank, opened a door, and seen a casino as big as New York, New York. Unlike Claude Rains in Casablanca, however, we should be shocked, shocked that gambling is going on.
Is he right? Is it really like a casino?
It is a lot like a casino, and gambling is a really good word for it because there's no regulation and no transparency.
Goldman, for one, Professor, is facing legal trouble over derivatives that it created. I mean, how difficult is it to prosecute these kinds of trades?
Well, it's not so much the trades as the disclosure, which is the funny SEC line. Because they don't have the power to regulate these instruments, they have to go after what Goldman said or didn't say. On paper, they have a good case.
What are you watching most closely in the cases coming down the pike?
Well, this is a big case in the sense that Goldman has always been sort of the favorite child of the banks and the most popular one, and obviously its reputation has taken a beating. So what comes out of this will be interesting. Other cases will be hard to bring unless the SEC brings them.
And Congress, you know, Congress is nearing the close of this long battle over derivatives, too, with perhaps the passage of financial reform. I mean, do you think lawmakers will get a handle on this?
I think the reform bill is a good start, but it's clearly insufficient.
Why is it insufficient?
Well, some of the biggest pieces of the reform bill have been and are being watered down. I don't think we should panic, though. The New Deal took 5 years in Congress. We ought to give them the time to work it out.
All right, Professor Hillary Sale over at the Washington University Law School in St. Louis. Professor, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, June 30th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. A report shows private employers in this country did not do much hiring in June. The payroll company ADP said private employers added only 13,000 jobs this month. Most experts were predicting 60,000. Joining us is economist Richard DeKayser, president of Woodley Park Research. He's with us every Wednesday from Washington, D.C. Hello.
Morning, Bill.
Richard, the economic signs seem to be getting more ominous. How foreboding is this private jobs report?
Well, I think what it does, Bill, is it confirms what we've seen in a variety of other places. Housing, consumer spending have each been showing signs of weakness, and now we see that tipping over into the labor market. And probably the expiration of tax credits is part of the reason why we're seeing this.
So here's what I want to know. Congress is having an argument about this right now. Is unemployment so bad that it's worth the government going into even more debt to extend unemployment benefits again? Does this news settle that question?
I think it does. I was convinced before today's report. What's clear is that the economy, though it continues to expand, is not on firm ground, still requiring support from various forms of government stimulus. And there is no better form of stimulus than giving benefits to unemployed workers. They spend virtually every dime they can get their hands on, so that's probably the best way to be sure to provide funds that do directly support economic growth.
Okay. Clear opinion on that. Economist Richard DeKayser of Woodley Park Research. Thank you.
My pleasure.
The Environmental Protection Agency does not think Texas is doing enough to keep its air clean. So today, the agency is expected to tell that state that the federal government is taking over air quality permitting for about 39 factories. From KUT in Austin, Ben Philpott reports.
What the federal government objects to most are the flexible permits that Texas issues to large plants and refineries. These allow the state to set a general limit on how much pollution an entire facility can release, rather than restricting each smokestack within a plant. Ralph Coker is a retired refinery manager who supports the Texas system, which he says allows companies to
put the best controls maybe on certain sources and less than the most efficient controls on some other small sources.
But the EPA believes each source of pollution should be tightly controlled. And today, the agency is expected to tell the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, or TCEQ, to fall in line. Tom Smith is with Public Citizen Texas, a watchdog group that is concerned about the Texas system.
Even the George Bush administration said to TCEQ, this process isn't working. And the industry has actually sued EPA, saying, let's figure out what the rules are here, because we're steering blind.
But Texas Governor Rick Perry, who's up for re-election in November, is expected vigorously to oppose the EPA's move. In Austin, I'm Ben Philpott for Marketplace.
listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, June 30th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. The European Central Bank, the ECB, just completed an important move to fund 171 banks in Europe. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live from London to help us understand what that means. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So we know investors have been worried about the health of banks there in Europe. How much did they borrow from the ECB?
Well, just $160 billion. Now, let me explain this. The European Central Bank has been propping up the European banking system, providing billions of dollars worth of emergency credit. But it wants to start weaning the banks off that credit to get them to stand on their own 2 feet. So it has said that tomorrow it's going to refuse to renew more than $500 billion worth of one-year loans. Instead, it says the banks can have cash for a shorter term, 3 months. Well, today they open that window and the banks ask for just $160 billion, much less than expected.
And that seems like good news, no?
The markets certainly seem to think so. European bank stocks are up this morning and the euro jumped more than half a cent. Yes, this does suggest European banks are not as badly strapped for cash as many people had feared. But we've seen many false dawns before, and one analyst I spoke to this morning said to fully restore confidence in the European system, we're going to have to see the results, all the results of those European bank stress tests, which won't be due out until the end of July.
All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
It's expected to be the world's largest stock offering. The Agricultural Bank of China plans to list on the Chinese exchanges next month. Today, the bank's CEO is in London trying to whip up support. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports for Marketplace.
The Agricultural Bank of China has come a long way from its humble origins. It was set up in 1951 to lend money to China's poor rural farmers. But today, people in Hong Kong were queuing up to register their interest in some of the $23 billion of shares the bank plans to sell. And substantial amounts have already been pledged by banks in the UK and the Middle East. But Daniel Rosen from the Rhodium Group in New York says the main customers will come from inside China itself.
Its first and foremost audience is the domestic audience. A big part of the demand for the shares of the Agricultural Bank of China will be subscribed by domestic institutional investors, not just by foreign ones.
This is the last of China's big state-owned banks to go public, but there's some concern it could also be the weakest. Most of its customers are less affluent and live in the countryside, and returns on its loans are lower than those made to customers in the cities. But the bank insists the business will benefit as rural incomes and economic growth in the less developed areas grow. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
India lost 10 million jobs in the country's recession last year, but even though the economy's rebounding, there are still too few jobs for the country's unemployed. Raymond Thibodeau reports from New Delhi, competition in the job market's pretty tough.
Delhi's main railway station is always packed with people. Travelers rush to catch their trains, usually trailed by porters that they've hired to carry their luggage. Outside, a husband and wife haggle with one of the porters, better known here as coolies. The haggling ends, and a coolie named Gabru Khan lifts two overstuffed suitcases onto his head. He sets off for the train platform with the family. Khan says he has a master's degree in Sanskrit. He wanted to be a teacher, but he ended up a coolie. S.K. Sharma is a commercial inspector at this station. He says there are more and more people like Khan in India who can't find the white-collar jobs they dreamed of and have to apply for menial jobs.
There are so many people who have no employment that this is the best course to get work.
Sharma says many of India's 100,000 licensed coolies were drawn to the job because it pays as much as $300 a month, well above India's average of $60 a month. And it comes with benefits like free medical care and free rail transport.
In these days,
more highly educated people are taking this job.
India's railway system gets at least 30 applications for every coolie job it advertises. And the selection process isn't easy. There's a medical exam, a police background check, and a test to show that they can carry nearly 90 pounds on their heads for the length of two football fields.
Welcome to New Delhi.
And they must attend courtesy training classes like this one to learn how to deal with foreigners. Anant Swarup is spokesman for India's Northern Railways. He says many coolies are from India's rural areas.
Most of your GDP growth comes from services. So it is but natural that there is a general shift from agriculture to services. And being a licensed porter is also a part of service.
That is, if you get the job. Still, he says being a coolie for India's railway offers one thing many Indians don't often find in the private sector these days, job security. In New Delhi, I'm Raymond Thibodeau for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Bill Radke. GPS is pretty much everywhere. Stock traders use GPS. Farmers use it. Our cell phones, obviously, and our cars communicate with satellites to fix their location. Now the GPS satellite system is getting an $8 billion upgrade. Instead of 20 feet, GPS users will be able to zoom in on locations within an arm's length. Reporter Sally Herships takes a look at the value of pinpointing locations.
Who doesn't like trees? Well, to some people, like surveyors, trees can mean big problems. Say you're measuring a site for construction on a residential street lined with trees.
Which is quite scenic and beautiful, except it blocks a lot of satellite signals, sort of a curse to surveyors.
Gavin Schrock is a GPS expert in Washington. The current GPS signal can't go through trees or rocks or even a city bus. And when surveyors can't make GPS work, they fall back on more expensive methods, taking physical measurements at ground level. Schrock says the new satellites will have a stronger signal. So he says surveyors in his state will save $1 million a year when the new technology is available. And other industries stand to save too.
Oh, the aviation folks for sure.
More specific location information means more direct flight paths, which means less fuel and more money saved for airlines. Then there's mining, search and rescue.
You know, you start to add those up. We're talking billions per year.
But most of us are probably more likely to notice the new GPS technology when we're shopping. Larry Harris is CEO of Ansible Mobile, a mobile marketing company.
For retail, it's going to be pretty much the hugest thing since cash registers. I mean, you're going to actually be able to do in-aisle stuff.
Right now, if you use a GPS app on a smartphone, marketers can tell when you're within a city block. But when the new, more accurate GPS becomes available, marketers will know when you're inside a particular store. If you want, advertisers will be able to send you coupons while you shop.
And they'll be like, dude, you're back. I see you rock the floss and you really like toothpaste. Have we got a deal for you?
Harris says the new GPS system could mean billions for the advertising industry. Boeing is building the new satellites. The first was launched last month. Boeing says the rest will be sent into orbit at a rate of 2 to 3 per year. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, Bill, a proofreading company in Massachusetts stands corrected.
Yes, I've heard about this.
The company proofread a couple of high school exams given to thousands of students last month. The tests contained about 100 errors. The phrase turning around was changed to truning around.
Right.
Yeah. Instead of for God's sake, it was for God's skay.
For God's skay. And I understand that, Steve, the head of the company has reviewed those tests and declared, quote, what's the problem? They look just fing to me. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
I'm Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.